How we doing, everybody? Thanks for tuning into the AthoraCast, the podcast that is all things Georgia World Congress Center Authority. You've probably seen the title of this episode already, and yeah, we'll be talking World Cup today. And we'll also be scattering some soccer talk throughout the next few months as we lead up to World Cup 2026 with 8 matches, including a semifinal that'll take place at Mercedes-Benz Stadium and Fan Fest in Centennial Olympic Park. So lots of action here at Georgia World Congress Center Authority's campus. We'll be having some guests on over the next year or so to talk a little soccer, or if you prefer, football, whatever you want to call it, as we get closer. Now, Atlanta's been a budding soccer city for quite some time, and now will be the home to U.S. soccer. So we thought, in getting prepped for next summer, what better guest to talk about that and some of the excitement you can expect than someone who's been a part of the soccer scene in the city for years, Jason Longshore. Jason's one of the most recognizable voices in Atlanta soccer. He's a commentator for Atlanta United on 92.9 The Game, Soccer Down Here Network, SDH Network, among others. And he's been in and around the scene here in Atlanta for a while. He grew up a fan right down the road, and he knows the impact hosting such a huge competition can have not only on the fans visiting to cheer on their squads, but on fans here in the city who get to experience it all firsthand. I talked to Jason a couple of weeks ago after a late night of covering the Club World Cup over at MBS. We talk about that a little bit. We had some upload issues last week, so I'm a little behind getting this out. Apologies on that. But don't worry if you're not a huge soccer fan already. You probably will be soon enough. Jason and I talk some about the game and the impact of hosting and the memories it creates. But if you're new to the game, he also gives some tips to keep an eye out for. So let's jump right into it. Well, Jason, thank you for taking some time to sit down and chat about a little bit of soccer when we've got kind of an intense super soccer summer going on right now, and we've got another one next summer, so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I know, at least from what I've read, you've kind of been a soccer guy your whole life. And did you grow up in this area?
Yeah, I grew up in Riverdale. Was born in Clayton County and then moved away when I was in middle school, first couple of years of high school. My dad got transferred with the post office up to Lexington, Kentucky.
Gotcha.
Was there, moved back when he retired to Stockbridge. So Graduated from Eagles Landing High School, and I've been in the area between here and Athens ever since.
Gotcha. So you've been, you know, kind of most of the time or a good portion of the time here in the Atlanta area. Yeah. Kind of what was that like being a soccer guy here back then? And what was kind of the soccer scene around the city, you know, back in that time?
It's funny how it's changed. Like, when I was a kid, I fell in love with the game because of the 86 World Cup. So I was 9 years old. I'd played one season at the Clayton County YMCA and loved it, but I didn't really have that connection point. You know, I grew up a Braves fan, a Falcons fan, a Hawks fan. So I had players that I idolized. I didn't have that after my first year of soccer until that World Cup. And in Diego Maradona in Argentina became that for me. So I then had the touch point. I'm like, okay, you know, I was just a little, like, I learned to read from the sports page. So I was just a little, like, hardcore sports fan. And I'm looking at it like, why do we have pro teams in Atlanta for everything else but soccer? Why? So I'm checking out all the books in the library and trying to learn about it. And it was kind of that. It felt very underground at that time when I was a kid. It was growing. It felt like every 4-year cycle, every World Cup. And, you know, my baseline was 86 when we didn't have a professional league. We didn't have any of that. 1990 was really interesting because I'd moved to Kentucky by that point, but TNT broadcast the World Cup. So you had a local Atlanta connection to it, and you had more games on television than you'd ever had before. Then 94, it's in the United States. So there was a huge boom from that. Every World Cup since, it's grown. So, like, you almost look at soccer in Atlanta's growth in every 4-year cycle. And it was very underground, and it started to become more and more mainstream over time. And that blew up, obviously, with Atlanta United launching, and that changed everything. But the thing I always try to remind people is, without all that underground, grassroots, seeds being planted, Atlanta United doesn't launch the way that it did. You had this scene that needed the boom moment, and you got it with Atlanta United, and that changed what soccer is in the city forever.
And kind of going back to that, too, I mean, I'm sure winning an MLS Cup in your second season might help a little bit with the casual fan.
A little bit.
But yeah, I mean, just could you tell that it was a city that would kind of latch on to the scene like that?
Yeah, I didn't know how fast it would be as big as it got. And that was the tricky thing to predict. But there was a lot of naysaying out there in the national media about it. A lot of leading soccer pundits were very negative about Atlanta getting a team. And they would look back at, you know, you had the Atlanta Chiefs back in the old North American Soccer League. And that story is actually fascinating because they created the soccer scene in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. When they launched in 1967, you had about 200 people playing soccer in Atlanta. It wasn't an international city then. So you didn't have the international community, the ethnic communities that other cities did. So they had to create everything from scratch. And they went out and did clinics and camps and helped rec departments start soccer programs. And it went from a couple hundred people playing to tens of thousands of people playing in 5 years. And that changed it. That planted all these seeds. So then you get generation after generation after generation. So having been part of that, I see what it could be, and you had never had an owner like Arthur Blank. So I think if you were not from Atlanta, you probably didn't get how big it could be, and I understand that. But with Arthur co-signing it and saying, this is going to be a big deal, I'm going to treat it just like I treat the Falcons. And that changed, I think, the paradigm for a lot of people. And then knowing what it could be with the right leadership, with the right investment, I had really high hopes for it. Did I know that you would draw 70,000 people that fast? No, I didn't. It came faster than I thought. But I knew it would be big. And that first year, there's kind of like three things that I always remember from that launch. The first conversation I had about what the season ticket deposits were looking like. And when they were getting over 30,000, it's like, wait a minute. This is a real big thing that this league has never really seen. Then the first preseason game up in Chattanooga and driving from Atlanta to Chattanooga for that and seeing people for a team that had never played any kind of a game, let alone a preseason game, with car flags, with bumper stickers, with the car magnets, seeing that on the way and seeing people in red and black Atlanta United gear before the team had ever played, that was really cool. The first game walking from the parking deck to Bobby Dodd Stadium and seeing so many jerseys, that was crazy. Like, this team had never played a game before, and people were already kitted out, ready to go. It was just so cool. And then the first game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I mean, there were so many, like, little milestones along that launch that were amazing when you think back to it. And could I predict it? Yeah, over time, but not that fast. That was the big surprise.
And, I mean, I guess there's kind of people that are crazy about the Falcons, crazy about UGA and all that kind of stuff around. So, I mean, was it a little bit surprising that people latched on that quick? Or, I mean, was it kind of one of those things where it's like, hey, this is a sports town state. So, I mean, maybe it's just that next thing, that next step, I guess, like you said, kind of putting a soccer team here in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I mean, this is an amazing sports city. And I think what we've seen with Atlanta sports fans, and at times we all get a bad rap, again, from some of the national folks who like to take their shots. But when something's hot, when something is good, people get behind it. And I think back to, you know, different Falcons eras where it was clicking, it was great, the team was winning. Everybody's talking about the Falcons. The Hawks and their playoff runs over the past couple decades, everybody starts talking about the Hawks. Braves, obviously, same thing. Georgia football, any of your local college teams that get on a run, college basketball, same thing. So I always had that impression that soccer would do the same. And I think, you know, maybe in 1996, would it have been the same? Maybe not. But again, going back to those four-year cycles, it had just become so much more mainstream. Kids grew up with the game in a way that I didn't, you know, and generations before and right after me didn't. It's now you find soccer everywhere. There's games on television or streaming services at all times of the day from all parts of the world. The city is so much more international than it used to be. It's also been the way that Arthur Blank intended for everything to come off as well. I think he was so intentional about it and just nailed it with, I remember a preseason Falcons broadcast in 16 where he comes on to do an interview and he has an Atlanta United lapel pin on his suit. And they ask about it and he's like, I'm really excited about the team launching. He always made sure that all of the banners with Mercedes-Benz Stadium being built had Falcons and Atlanta United right next to each other. And in some other cities in this league with NFL ownership, with Major League Soccer teams, it wasn't treated that way. Here it was always equal. We were really lucky at 92.9 The Game as well, where our program director at the time, Terry Fox, told everybody, like, we're going to talk about this just like everything else. And I think that's what sets Atlanta apart as a soccer city, is the mainstream sports conversation includes soccer here. Whereas other great soccer cities, you know, you can talk New York, Chicago, LA, Miami, you can also talk Portland and Seattle, St. Louis. Soccer is kind of in a separate section. Sure. It's not talked about here where, you know, talking about college football, I remember the first big Saturday afternoon game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium and people said, you know, oh, this game's in the fall, Georgia's playing down the street and Auburn's at home too and SEC's on CBS. The people are not going to show up. 70,000 people. People will come for a big deal. And I think we're seeing that here. And soccer's just treated just like every other sport. That's what's so cool about Atlanta, is what makes it different.
And I guess kind of going back a few years, you could see it now. But did you ever think, say, 20, 30 years ago that Atlanta would end up being kind of the home of U.S. soccer?
No. No, never saw that coming. And that's kind of the next step for where everything is right now. You know, you've got, I remember the last World Cup bid that included Atlanta. It was for 2018 or 2022. And I think the bid process was in 2008, 2009. I was working for Soccer in the Streets at the time. We were part of the legacy components of it. And at that point, you know, you didn't have Atlanta United. You were kind of in between the eras of the Atlanta Silverbacks playing professionally. So it felt more like a pipe dream at that point of, could this actually happen and have World Cup games in Atlanta? You know, there was talk about a new stadium being built. So, yeah, maybe, you know, what does it turn into? We'll just have to wait and see. U.S. didn't get those World Cups. So by the time the next bidding came around, you had Atlanta United on the ground. You had a world-class stadium in Mercedes-Benz Stadium open. It was a no-brainer that it would be in that mix. But then when U.S. Soccer started talking about what they wanted to do, being around Atlanta United, I knew that the people there really wanted to bring U.S. Soccer here. I knew that was a very big push internally to make it happen. And there's nobody else who could really compete with what we have here when we get down into the infrastructure and the nuts and bolts of it, with the airport, with the surrounding areas. And that's where it becomes so critical to have Fayette County and the land that they're able to acquire, and Arthur Blank pushing it over the line and getting it done to bring the first time ever a U.S. Soccer national headquarters that they've never had to our area. So that means we're going to get more national team friendlies. We're going to get the men playing games here, the women playing games here, the youth national teams training here. And that's just going to continue to grow the ecosystem.
And speaking of kind of the worldwide events and stuff, I've been trying to do the math in my head while I've been thinking about this question. 1996, were you in town for the Olympics?
I was.
And so, I mean, how do you kind of compare that to what folks can expect next summer for the World Cup? I mean, I know it's, you know, one sport,
yeah,
but it's going to be the whole world, at least, yeah, for a few hours on those match days and stuff like that. And then, you know, the different countries that'll be involved. But just what can folks expect kind of from that national stage that Atlanta is going to be thrust into, this summer right now with the Club World, mm-hmm, Cup, but then next summer with the FIFA World Cup?
It's going to feel a little different than the Olympics did, because that was constant activity in Atlanta. World Cup, we've got 8 games, but the time span of those games and then the tournament happening in other parts of the country, it's longer than the Olympics. The World Cup is a bigger event for the world than the Olympics. More countries participate trying to qualify. It's it's the biggest sporting event in the world. And the eight games that we're going to have here, it's the equivalent of eight Super Bowls, probably more, honestly. It's going to be crazy. Like, it's going to be so crazy. I think we've gotten a taste of it with the Club World Cup, which is a brand new event. And people had all kinds of different expectations. And I think some people tried to downplay it initially and weren't sure. A lot of the European media weren't all that excited about this tournament. Maybe that bled into our U.S. soccer media. But I think if you've been in the stadium for the PSG-Miami game, if you've been in the stadium for other games, I mean, Dortmund and Monterrey last night, the Mexican fans were amazing and loud. And you're getting that aspect of all of these folks that are leading soccer people in the world coming into our building where we get a chance to be on a regular basis and just being in awe of the facility. Pep Guardiola, one of the greatest managers in the history of the game, just started raving, you know, unprompted about how great the stadium was and how much he was looking forward to it. It's gonna be something that there's not very many cities that have had World Cup games and Olympics. There's not many that have had the level of World Cup game that we're going to have. And we're going to have the second semifinal, which is really the second biggest game in the tournament. We're going to have that. We're going to set the final when we're done here that day. And all the world's sporting eyes will be on Atlanta. And that, and I saw it with the Olympics, the after effects, I think, are what's so interesting. Because Atlanta became more well-known worldwide after hosting the Olympics. You know, we knew how special Atlanta was, but the rest of the world maybe didn't, or they had stereotypes in their head, and the Olympics changed it. It took a while to, I think, fully capitalize on it, but we're in a different position now. I think the city's in a completely different position, and the amount of things that are going to happen, maybe not directly tied to the World Cup, but people having a taste of Atlanta and saying, you know what, I'd like to move there. People having a taste of Atlanta from a business side and saying, you know what, I'd like to set up an office there. I'd like to have my headquarters there. We've seen it over time. I think the World Cup can be an absolute boom period for the city.
And I know soccer fandom's a little bit different just because, you know, there's leagues everywhere. Yeah. And it's so much more of an international game. You know, when we were talking about being fans of Falcons, things like that, it made me think back to, you know, me being a kid growing up in Louisiana. If you wore anything other than a Saints shirt, you know, you were going to get tarred and feathered in town.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, I mean, do you think that kind of leads to a little bit more exposure, the fact that you can be an Atlanta United diehard, yeah. You can also root for, you know, West Ham in the Premier League and Dortmund or, you know, mm-hmm. teams all around the world. And then not just that, but say looking down United's roster, you've yeah. got so many different countries represented. So then there's a little bit of familiarity, I guess maybe you could call it, whenever yeah. there is a tournament like the World Cup that comes around. You're like, oh my gosh, I watch him every Saturday. And mm-hmm. now, you know, he gets to play. So, I mean, does that kind of, at least in your mind, expand the fandom? I don't know if I'm putting that the right way. But you know what I mean? You yeah. have familiarity with players from a bunch of different leagues all over the world, and then there's so many different nationalities per team. Mm-hmm.
That's what's special about soccer to me, is it's always taught me about the rest of the world. Yeah, you know, I didn't grow up in a family with the means to be able to travel internationally. You know, I didn't get to travel internationally until I started working for Atlanta United. I fell in love with Argentina because of the way that they played soccer, and I wanted to learn about the country and the culture. And it's the same with new players who come to Atlanta United. I want to know where they come from. I want to know what their soccer culture is like, and then what their country's culture is like. It's been my encyclopedia to the world. So I think what's cool about World Cups, and I'm seeing it with the Club World Cup right now, you know, we didn't get them in here in Atlanta, but a team like Mamelodi Sundowns from South Africa, I've never had the chance to watch them play in league matches. That's one of the few leagues that isn't on TV or a streaming service here in the United States. But getting a chance to see them play, I love the way that they were so wide open and attacking and throwing numbers forward and just the joy of the game. That's a team I want to see more from. I want to learn more about. Every World Cup, I feel like there's countries and national teams that happens with that, you know, we don't really know a lot about, even in our soccer world, coming into that tournament. And there's a player who just captures the world's attention, a team that has a great win, that, you know, you see things that we don't always get to see in this game. Colombia in 2014 is one that I always think about. It's such a cool element. Morocco in the last World Cup was another one. You know, it's just such a cool element of World Cups, and it's something that I think sports fans are used to with the Olympics. And if you're not a hardcore soccer fan, there's those personal stories that always attract us to it. If you're a hardcore soccer fan, you're going to see players that you've watched at the club level, because we can watch games from 9 in the morning until 11 at night from every country in the world pretty much, and see these players play in this next year leading up to the tournament. And we're going to get to see a lot of them here in our stadium. Hopefully we're going to get to see a lot of players who represent our city at the club level in our stadium representing their national team. And the feeling that they're going to have, where they get to play at home in a way for their national team and bring their national team to us, is going to be so cool. I mean, I think of a guy like Bartosz Szlich with Atlanta United from Poland, and he's really breaking into the national team and playing really well, and he's been playing really well this summer for Atlanta United. If he gets a chance to walk his team into his home building, I can't imagine what that would feel like for him. I know I'll be emotional about watching it. I can't imagine what he's going to be.
So, yeah, and I mean, just kind of going back to that and picking, you know, teams to root for, stuff like that. Do you ever see people that kind of follow? Well, I mean, I know you do with guys like Ronaldo and Messi and stuff like that, but kind of follow those teams through the World Cup. And then, you know, it's almost like, what is that people wear the house divided jerseys or something like that? I mean, what do you see as far as that, you know, somebody having a half USA, half Argentina jersey because they're a huge Messi fan or something? You know?
It happens. I mean, it happens with some of our sports. Like, the house divided stuff is real. I compare it a lot to college football. I think that's probably the closest thing that we have in our orbit to what soccer fandom feels like. You know, and being in this part of the world, you know, we have our teams probably. I mean, I went to UGA, so I'm going to be rooting for Georgia nonstop. But I don't have a team in the, you know, in the WAC. And there's going to be times that I'll see somebody be like, oh, I like the way they play. Cool, I'll watch them in this bowl game. I'll watch them in the playoff and see how far they get. That's soccer, you know. And Messi has created a ton of fans of Argentina. It's the same for me with Maradona. You know, I didn't have a touchstone to Argentina, but I love the way that he played. I love the way that his team played. They became kind of my second team. I think a lot of people have that. So you'll have some of that coming in with players that you love at the club level that are playing in this tournament. So cool, you'll root for them with their national team. But then there's always the unknown factor. A team that you don't know, that you haven't seen, you don't have any touch point for, but you watch them play and you feel it. And you become a fan of that country. And what's so cool about where the world is today is it's a lot smaller than it used to be. And you see Morocco play and you love how they work and they play. And you say, you know what, I want to go learn about Moroccan cuisine. I want to go to a Moroccan restaurant. Well, there's great ones in Atlanta. So cool. You can get to see that now. That's what's so cool about a World Cup, is it brings the world together. And in a time where we need that more than ever, this is a really big deal next year that we're all going to get to experience firsthand.
And I love the part that, you know, it brings us together. But then for those 90 minutes, of course, you know, we're probably all, you know, I'll speak for myself. Hey, go USA.
100%.
But, you know, I mean, with me in the Olympics, right, I could be watching water polo. Mm-hmm. I don't know the rules. I have no idea what's happening. But for however long that game or match is, it's all USA. You know, I mean, do you kind of see that going with the World Cup and everything, and just folks that maybe they don't really get into the game, but then once it becomes, you know, a worldwide stage, then it's just like, I don't even know what I'm talking about, but go USA kind of thing.
100%. I've seen that with every World Cup. Honestly, since I started watching the game, I feel like every World Cup, it becomes more mainstream. I remember the run in 2014 specifically, because we were doing watch parties in Virginia Highlands for fundraisers for Soccer in the Streets. And as that tournament went on, it felt like I had more and more people who had never asked me soccer questions reaching out and say, well, why is this guy starting? Why? What happened in that game? Why did that call happen? It's always such a cool moment. And I'm sure fans of other sports in the Olympics have had that same reaction. I don't know water polo either, but yeah, I'm going to root for the U.S. And I know the gist of, you're trying to score a goal. Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll learn the rest and I'll figure out the rest as I'm watching it. That's the beauty of soccer. It's not that complicated. You're trying to score. There's ways you can stop that. There's ways you can try to accentuate that. There are some rules inside of it and some things that are evolving, just like all of our other sports are evolving, with video replay and technology entering the fray and better athletes than we've ever seen before. So the game's faster. All of these different things that every sport grapples with, soccer is too. But the basic gist of it, you're trying to score more goals than the other team. And defensively, I'm trying to keep them out of my goal. Pretty simple when you get down to that level.
Yeah, and I like how you pointed out, you know, people asking questions about so-and-so starting, stuff like that. One of my favorite things is just kind of like heroes created, right? Like I watch, I'm into it. I'm not as in-depth as a lot of people, but what immediately in my head, what popped in was back in Brazil, I don't even remember who we were playing. Jermaine Jones just had a firecracker goal. And I had heard of him a little bit, but never, because I think he was playing in Germany maybe
at
the time.
You're right.
But yeah, I remember that goal like it was yesterday, freaking out. You know, it was amazing. So, I mean, just creating heroes kind of that, you know, your everyday fan might not know about. That's something that's just super cool to me.
Yeah.
And looking forward to who it may be.
It's such a huge element. I mean, 2010, Landon Donovan, the goal against Algeria, that was the Lake Placid, you know, U.S. hockey team kind of moment that U.S. soccer hadn't really had on that stage. And I always think back to the two, like, broadcast calls of that, being in the industry that I'm in English, you know, the Go Go USA from Ian Dark, which is legendary. But Andres Cantor in Spanish, his call is unbelievable. I mean, this is somebody who's worked in the United States for decades upon decades, and you could hear the tears in his voice. Just unbelievable. And that moment in two different languages is one of the most seminal moments for soccer in the United States. It's what's so special about this. You're going to have people that are on that World Cup team for the U.S., hopefully some from the Atlanta area. Hopefully, you know, maybe some that have played for Atlanta United. And you look at that team and you never know when that moment comes. It could be a great save. It could be a block off the line for a defender. It could be a great goal, a great pass, a great dribble, and it changes people's lives. That's what a World Cup can do. And then us on the outside watching it, we become forever fans of that person.
Yeah, and also I think it kind of came up a little earlier, just bringing people together, you know, in a time whenever there's so much division and stuff, everybody can come and experience one of those moments together.
Yeah.
Whether you're in person or on TV, just the emotion that comes out of it, everything seems so raw. And I feel like sometimes, you know, people will romanticize things, but sports is pretty romantic. You know?
Yeah, 100%. That's what I love about it. I mean, a good game, there's nothing like, for what I do in calling games, there is nothing like a great emotional match. I'll feel exhausted after it. You know, you have to be like so into it and so locked in, and it wears you out. I mean, I remember the 2014 loss in the round of 16 to Belgium, after our, you know, after the game finished and everybody left from our fundraising event. I sat on the patio of the place we were watching it for 30 minutes. Just didn't want to talk to anybody. I was just so upset that run was over. That's what the sport does, you know. And what's cool about it with a World Cup, and I think we're going to see it firsthand here in Atlanta, is the games at the stadium are going to be incredible, but the fan fest events are going to be a whole nother level, with the events at Centennial Olympic Park, with, you know, people being able to, okay, maybe they can't get into the stadium for a game, but they can watch the game in downtown Atlanta with a huge crowd. But then other games from other parts of the country, other big games are going to be there too. So you get to experience it. Some of the coolest things about 2014 that I remember with the tournament being in Brazil was the fan fests on the beaches.
Yeah.
And fans from different countries. I mean, Argentina made it to the finals. They kind of took over the country for a month, which was cool. But the German fans, you know, other fans from other countries getting to come. You know, if we get a chance here, you know, if we have Germany, if we have South Korea, would be amazing. If we have Japan, Argentina, you're going to get a taste of how they feel the game. And what's cool about a World Cup is it's so welcoming to me. It feels like if you're from Atlanta and you've never been to Germany and the German fans are here watching their team play, they're like, come on, have a beer. Come hang out with us. We'll teach you. It's cool. Hang out with us. And that's the cool element of this. And kind of goes back to college football. Like, I always think of that too, like all the fun trash talk in the SEC. But if if you go on the road to a game, and I've done this in Kentucky, I've done it at LSU, you know, you're walking through in your Georgia gear and people are like, ah, you're going to lose, whatever, maybe saying some things I shouldn't repeat. But then they're going to say, hey, come over, have a beer, have a hot dog, come hang out. Like, that's what's cool about this. That's what sports does. And a World Cup does that on an international scale. It's just, it's so special.
And you mentioned, you know, folks coming in and being welcomed in by other fans. So that leads perfectly into this. You know, you call the game, so obviously you're into the nitty gritty and stuff. Say I'm a fan who I've never watched a game before. I don't really know what's going on. Mm-hmm. What are some tips you can give them, you know, leading in for, you know, they're going to a watch party. They're coming down to FanFest, hopefully at Centennial Olympic Park. Or, you know, going to a match, but come to FanFest first because it's a quick walk. A plug there for GWCCA. but, yeah, what are maybe, you know, just some high-level things, you know, for folks to that are just getting into it, just to kind of look for and, you know, things that make you feel smart at a party or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think the basics are there. And I think at times in the soccer world, maybe we try to make it too complicated in the way that we explain it. And that's never been my mentality. I love calling games on 92.9 The Game because we have such a hardcore Falcons audience because their games are on the station too. Hawks audience, same thing. And fans find us who have never heard a soccer game on the radio, never watched a game, never been to a game. And I keep that in mind in the way that I call a game. I want it to be universal. I'll then try to educate and go a step further, but I want it to be universal in what's happening. I think if you're watching a game for the first time, watch how a team attacks and watch how a team defends. You know, I'm always looking at teams I don't know of kind of a rough shape of how they're attacking. Do they like to attack through the middle? Do they like to attack through the wings? Do they attack with a long ball? Do they attack by dribbling and short passes? You know, teams have different personalities in their attack. And then defensively, are they putting everybody behind the ball and they're just holding on to defend? Probably they're an underdog. Probably they know that that's going to be their best route for success. Keep it tight. Try to steal something going the other way. Are they super aggressive defensively? Are they defending high up the field, almost like a full court press? That gives you a hint of their personality. And watch for the, I think for me, watch for the players who are brave. That's what is always what will grab my attention about a team that I've never seen before and or a player that I don't know. Do they want the ball? Are they getting on the ball a lot? Are they taking people on the dribble? Are they looking for that shot from distance and they're not afraid to take it? Those are the players that my eyes always gravitate to. And I think those are the players that if you're watching a game for the first time, watch who's getting a lot of the ball. Watch who their teammates are giving them a lot of the ball. Watch those players and just kind of try to get a sense of the personality of the teams. Are they aggressive? Are they conservative? Are they taking risks? Are they really risk averse? I think those kind of give you a sense of how a game could play out.
And as a longtime Atlantan, I get that wrong all the time. But, you know, it's somebody that's been involved in the soccer scene here for years. What we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but what are some of the things maybe that you're looking forward to the most, that maybe some stuff to build off of from this summer and then just some things that you're kind of looking forward to next summer, maybe after the draw when we know who's coming, or just really kind of big picture things before we have the draw in December?
I feel like a lot of it starts with the draw. I can't wait to see what our matchups are going to be and then start to map out, okay, what would the pathways be to those knockout games? That's one. And that's always like kind of the start to the actual tournament. You've got qualifying going on. There's going to be a lot of big games in the fall in World Cup qualifying in September and October and November. There will still be some spots up for grabs after the draw and playoffs and interconfederational playoffs, which will be a big deal and give us a good taste of where it's going. But the draw is huge because then we'll know, do we get the defending champions Argentina? You know, do we get a European powerhouse? Do we get, I keep saying South Korea or Japan. I think those fan bases would be so cool to have in Atlanta. And I think that would be a big surprise for, you know, people who aren't as clued in about what that could feel like from a fan perspective. South Korean fans, Japanese fans are amazing and super passionate. And we've seen some of it in the Club World Cup. Would love to have them here in Atlanta and see what that looks like. If Colombia comes, I think that's another one that has been a big surprise in the soccer scene with viewing parties here in Atlanta. Colombian fans turn out in a big way. If we get Colombia here in our stadium, watch out. That's going to be a blast. The parties will be epic for that one. So definitely get your yellow shirts ready if you're looking for a team to support. But I'm also looking at what happens after the tournament's done. You're going to have so many spill-on effects because by that point, U.S. soccer will be fully entrenched in the Atlanta area. You're going to have so many different legacy components to the tournament, whether we're talking about soccer in the streets and the station soccer projects around the MARTA stations, great organizations like the Georgia Revolution down in Henry County, Georgia Impact up in Cherokee County, and what they're doing at a grassroots level and an after-school level. And then there's going to be a build-up to the Women's World Cup in 2031, which the U.S. will get, and I have spoken it into a hopeful existence that Atlanta will be in the midst of trying to get the final for that tournament. Atlanta is ready for it, and I think that tournament will be another opportunity to build on this legacy. But between the two tournaments, you're going to have Atlanta United continuing to grow. You're going to have international friendlies. You're going to have every major club and national team looking at what they see in Atlanta next summer and say, I want to be part of that. I want to capitalize on that soccer community because it's the biggest, it's the best, and the city is so well equipped to host us and make it a major event. So this is just the start of it. Like the tournament, I think the impacts of the tournament don't end after that semifinal game and the final whistle. I think it honestly just begins in a lot of ways.
And it also kind of makes me think, too, because, you know, you mentioned the next generation and the folks, the kids that are going to be here and be able to be involved and stuff like that. Because, you know, I got into the game watching on television. So, you know, kids that are going to be able to be in the mix, whether it's at a match, at FanFest, something like that. That's one of the things that kind of pops in my head, too, is that so much exposure for so many kids here.
It's game changing. It's like it was for me when I liked the game before I had a hero in the game. And when I had that hero, that person that I wanted to emulate, it changed everything. So if you're a kid now who's never had access to the game, you're going to have access next summer. It's going to be everywhere. Now, I think then it will be on all of the soccer stakeholders in the state to continue to capitalize on that and make the game more accessible to more kids and give them more opportunities to play. High school soccer is something I'm very passionate about in Georgia, and it's been so cool to see it grow. And that's where everybody gets that opportunity to play. There's no cost to getting in. I mean, you have to get uniforms and booster fees and that sort of stuff, but that can get covered. I think you have such a huge opportunity for kids who haven't had a chance to play or haven't had a chance to play at a high level or have played it and like it, but they don't have that context yet. You're going to see players, teams, fan bases firsthand next summer that will change kids' lives, and they will be on a different track in what they love, what they're passionate about, what they want to play than they were before the tournament starts. It's something I'm really looking forward to.
Okay, so we've got the, you know, the draw coming up in December. We're not going to know exactly who's going to be here and all that kind of stuff, but looking ahead, what are maybe some of those dream matchups, whether it be for the city, for the fans, for folks that would travel in, folks that live here, things like that. What are some of those matchups maybe that you could, if you could wish into existence, or folks, teams that you would want here for folks to experience that?
Yeah, I almost look at like two separate areas of it, because the group stage, you know, I've mentioned South Korea and Japan. I think those are two communities that are actually really big in Atlanta already and would be so mobilized by having their national team here. And then just Atlanta being what it is in the Southeast, so many fans would travel in for those games from the region, let alone internationally. Those would be huge. Colombia is such a huge fan base here. You know, we talk about the Hispanic communities in Georgia, and they are so much more diverse than they have been in previous decades. I think the Colombian population is huge. Guatemala's trying to get into their first World Cup ever. They have a chance to do it with the U.S. and Mexico and Canada already qualified out of North and Central America. They've made a run in the Gold Cup to the semifinals. This is a Guatemalan team that could be a generational kind of squad for them. And if they get into this tournament and play in Atlanta, I think people will be absolutely shocked by how much light blue they will see in the city in the build up to that game. I've seen it decades ago when they played a World Cup qualifier in Birmingham against the US, and the drive from Atlanta to Birmingham, we passed so many cars with Guatemalan flags and Guatemalan jerseys. So if they get here for the first time ever, it will be an amazing spectacle in the city. There's so many that I would love to see. Obviously, the major powerhouses, like in Argentina, who we saw last year during Copa America, and fans were singing in the streets outside of the Westin for Lionel Messi. I mean, that's so cool. Your England's, your Germany's, your Italy's, your France, you know, your big countries, obviously. So I look at the group stage will be really cool, but then you start to look at the knockouts and you look at that semifinal, and that World Cup semifinals in a lot of cases have been even better than the finals because of the desperation that you get in those moments, the stories that can emerge of somebody finally getting to a World Cup final, somebody getting back to one. I mean, if Argentina wins a World Cup semifinal here, we will be Buenos Aires light in Atlanta for that. But if you typically get classic matchups too, you know, if you get Argentina and England in that game, if you get England and France, if you get, you know, Germany and England, and then if you get a surprise, you know, like I've mentioned Morocco, you know, Morocco got to the semifinal last time. If you get somebody like that, every fan of that team will find their way to Atlanta for that game. Not all of them will fit in the stadium. They'll be at FanFest. It will be just an incredible scene. So we're really lucky that we're going to get all of this next summer. And I think for people who are passionate about it like me, we have to not take it for granted. And we have to, you know, pinch ourselves occasionally and remember, like, the world's going to get to experience what we get to experience on a regular basis with Atlanta United games and the stadium and just the scene around it. But for people who aren't as hardcore into soccer, this could be the event maybe that changes your perception on it, but also maybe changes your perception on different countries from around the world, because you're going to meet people from everywhere. You're going to get to have a beer and have food with people from everywhere, celebrate games with people from everywhere, from all around the world. It's just such a cool, special event that we're going to get to have, and I cannot wait for it.
And Atlanta knows how to put on a big event, you know, big sporting event and stuff like that. And it kind of made me think about it whenever you were talking about Guatemala, you know, because if they do make the tournament, they are here. You know, you get a win in Atlanta, something like that. I mean, that's something that the city of Atlanta is special to you for the rest of your life.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that I don't know why that popped in my head.
No,
but like, that's something so cool that becomes a core memory of somebody, you know, an experience here in Atlanta. So super cool.
Yeah, that's such a cool factor of World Cups where you have those memories. And like Mexico City is special to Argentines because they won a World Cup there. Qatar is now special to Argentines because they won the last World Cup there. So countries that would have no connection, they do because of this game. And that's what's so incredible about all of this, that we're going to get to have it firsthand and get to experience it. And I think the flip side is people are going to get to experience Atlanta. And, you know, we being here, we know how special this place is. You know, whether we've been here our whole lives or we're new to the city, you know, once you put down your roots here, you're an Atlantan and you're part of the family. And we're going to get to share that with the rest of the world. And I think grow our family because of it.
Beautiful. I think that's about all I got. Jason, I appreciate it.
Anytime.
So yeah, huge would be an understatement for what we're looking forward to next summer, but I guess that's the word I'll use, huge. World Cup 2026 right around the corner. Can't wait for the memories it's going to create. Thanks again to Jason Longshore for taking some time to chat and opening my eyes and getting me excited about possible teams and countries we could host. You can check Jason out on 92.9 The Game, SDH Network, the Off the Woodwork podcast. I mean, if you're a soccer fan here in Atlanta, you know Jason, but if you're new, go check him out. And I said this would be a series. Be on the lookout over the next year as we sprinkle some soccer and World Cup talk into our regularly scheduled programming. But that's what can be fun about this show, I guess. It's kind of like a box of chocolates. Well, from the folks here at Georgia World Congress Center Authority, or at least me, Austin Simmons, thank you for listening to the AthoraCast. Until next time, we'll see you later.